Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie. And a few weeks ago, this is how the president described the White House's plan to deal with ISIS.
I don't want to put the cart before the horse. We don't have a strategy yet.
And here's how a lot of people, not just Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters, responded to the president's ambivalence.
He can't make a decision. That we have a president who has a real psychological problem that he can't face responsibility, and certainly not the responsibilities of his office.
Here with us in Studio 3 is someone who spends a lot of time thinking about thinking and whose research actually may back up the president's caution and restraint. Michael Norton is a behavioral economist and professor at Harvard Business School. His latest book is Happy Money, The Science of Smarter Spending. Michael, it's great to see you again.
Great to see you.
These are great stories you've got in your work here. But we think too much about decisions. We don't think enough about decisions. That's what you've concluded. But before we get to that, I just want to ask you the one thing that it just so resonated with me. If we are behind somebody in line at the ice cream store and they're back and forth, maybe walnut, chocolate chip, strawberry, black raspberry, they can't make up their mind, we can't stand that person. Now, what is that about, please, Michael Norton?
I think, you know, when we're in line, we're thinking basically, how do you not know this? That seems like not the world's most complicated decision. It's just ice cream. You know, if they were choosing between two careers, I don't think we'd be that surprised if they took a few minutes to decide.
Or whether they're going to bomb ISIS in Syria.
For example, perhaps. But if it's chocolate versus vanilla, it's all ice cream. What difference does it make? And that's partly why it infuriates us, because it doesn't seem like the kind of decision that should require this emotional drama.
So do we need this kind of emotional drama when we are making the big decisions, or don't we? What is your research show?
It turns out that sometimes we just think that if you think longer about things, if I see you thinking about something, then I'll trust you more and I'll think, oh, that was a really good decision that you made because you thought about it.
Uh-huh.
But in these simple kinds of decisions, actually, we really hate when people take too long. So it turns out that you can't just either think quickly or think slowly and convince people that it's the right decision. You have to think the amount that they think is the right amount to think in order for people to say, wow, that guy made a really good choice.
So does that mean that even though there was a lot of criticism of the president, and it wasn't, as I said, it wasn't just this Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters, a lot of people criticized the president. How can he not have a plan? How can he not have a strategy? Based on your research, it seems to me we should have embraced the president. The theory should have been, this is a pretty serious thing. We just finally got out of two wars. We're about to get in another one, even if he doesn't call it that. We want him to do some serious thinking, but that didn't seem to be where the American people were. So doesn't that sort of fly in the face of your conclusions?
I think probably saying I don't have a strategy is slightly different than saying here's the thought process that I'm going through to come up with my decision. So we're okay with people taking time if it seems like they're getting somewhere. Some people reacted, at least to President Obama's statement, as we're just flailing around and we don't even have any decision-making plan in process, not to mention we don't know what we're going to do next. I think that's part of why people reacted that way.
We're talking with Michael Norton. He's a professor at Harvard Business School. Michael, but there's another president in one of these pieces that we read in preparation for your coming here today who notoriously went through so many machinations and so many intricacies and possibilities. He couldn't make a decision either. At least that's what the literature says. And that was Bill Clinton.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, we had George W. Bush, who was the decider.
He called himself.
And it really was, I decide from my gut. So sometimes we're attracted to people who do quickly say, this is the correct answer. We actually ran a study. So we asked Republicans and Democrats to imagine a president who was a Republican or Democrat who made a decision. And the person made the decision very quickly or very slowly. And it turns out that if they agree with you, you don't mind when they decide from their gut, because of course that's the correct thing to do. But if they don't agree with you and they decide from their gut, you think they're the dumbest person in the world. And both sides did it to the other party. So we like deciders in our own side.
Uh-huh.
We don't so much like the deciders when they're on the other side, because we think they're wrong. Why didn't they think more about it? If only they thought more about it, of course they would see that I'm right.
And so we're talking to Michael Norton. And Michael, let's forget about how we judge others for the moment. We'll get back to that in a few minutes. Let's talk about how we make decisions ourselves. And I think Marjorie summed up at least how I saw your research is some of us think too much, some of us think too little. And the conclusion is we have to figure out where is the middle point, or where is the point on that spectrum relating to the difficulty of the decision, and that's where we should end up. I understand the concept, and it makes total sense to me. How do you do that? I mean, it isn't, you have to think about how you think before you decide how much to think. Is that not what you're saying?
That's kind of the way to think about it. And one thing to really think about is how important is the decision to you? So if you're the kind of person who takes 3 hours every morning deciding which web page to read, it's not a good use of your time, right? That's not a decision that should require that much time. If the decision is simple and you're taking an enormous amount of time, probably you should just flip a coin. In other words, it doesn't really matter with the ice cream. It doesn't really matter if you have chocolate or vanilla. It'll be fine. If you're making an incredibly important life decision, like you just got a new job and you're signing up for your retirement accounts, and you take 1.5 minutes to check the boxes and hand the form in, that's probably too little. So if you think about how big the choice is and how big the implications are, you can calibrate yourself a bit on, am I thinking too little about this? Or am I thinking too much about this?
But are you suggesting that we should essentially train ourselves to do this so that it becomes second nature? Or are you saying we should consciously enter decision? I don't mean, you write about, obviously you can be paralyzed if you decide when you get out of bed, am I getting out of bed now? Am I waiting 5 minutes? And even though I lived through some of that with the infamous snooze alarm thing, are you literally saying, I'm about to go into the ice cream store that Marjorie is talking about? Yeah, I'm going to just choose when I go in, or I'm about to make a major decision about when to retire or how much to put in my retirement account. Let me decide now that I'm going to put some serious thought into this and not decide at the end of the week. Are you saying it should be that literal? Is that where you're going?
Absolutely. So you only have so much time in a day. You only really have so much executive capacity to, most of the day we just kind of sit there and surf the web. And then we have maybe an hour of good brain time if we're lucky in a given day. If you waste your hour of good brain time on trivial decisions, that's not a good use of your executive function. You want to be using it on things that are really important. And yes, you really can say, how important is this decision going to be later today? How important is it going to be next week? And if it's what to have for lunch, it just doesn't matter that. You could just close your eyes and grab it.
Let's talk about you for one.
By the way, okay. I'm sorry.
I want to talk about you for 1 second. You're going to think, this is a joke. I don't. You're contacted by Chelsea, our lead producer, and said, Michael, I've read about your research on thinking and decision making. We'd like you to come on. How'd you decide to do this? I mean, you're a fairly busy guy. You're doing a lot of work, we know. Seriously.
Because we're charming and irresistible.
Well, maybe.
Couldn't wait.
How did you decide this?
I asked if you would be confrontational, and she said no, but now I...
No, really, how did you make that decision?
So deciding how to allocate your time is an interesting question. It's different than allocating your decision-making time, mm-hmm. but you're right to think about how am I allocating my time in general. It's an experience that's good, right? So if I say, should I think very hard about whether I should do this? How long should I wait to respond to her, yes or no? Mm-hmm. I can just think quickly. I live close by. I like these people. I should go, right? I don't need to say, well, what are the ramifications of going or not? Or what are the 9 million other things I could do with this time? It doesn't need to be that kind of a decision.
How long did it take you to decide to come?
5 minutes, I bet.
Okay.
There you go. I want to get to the whole thing about lists in just a second. But before we get to lists, you mentioned the eating, and we're still on the ice cream thing to a little bit. There's a story in here. I think it's – I don't even know where it's from. New York Magazine. This guy who has his friends decide for him what he should have for lunch. They pick the food off the menu because it's sort of an offbeat interpretation, as this piece says, of the research on decision fatigue. So the idea that he doesn't want to waste, his thinking about important decisions on a less important thing about having for lunch. Now, that seems like crazy to me. What does picking your turkey sandwich have to do with picking your retirement account?
I think it's crazy, and it's also very wise at the same time. If you look at, for example, Steve Jobs, same clothes every day. Bill Gates, same clothes every day.
Is that really true?
Yes.
Because they didn't want to spend any time on something? Is that inconsequential? Well, Marjorie's pointing herself. She does wear the same thing almost every
day.
Exactly. And you're in the same breath. But is that really true? And that was why they decided to wear the same clothes every day?
Absolutely. Because if you think about how much good time you have in a day, it's not that much. Do you want to waste even 4 seconds of your time thinking on which shoes look better? It's not usually for most people the best use of their time in the day. So really thinking about how do I minimize the time I spend making trivial choices. One way is to have the same thing every day. I always have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich every day for lunch. You hear people say that.
Yep.
Another way that I love is to have other people make the decision for you. because then it's just off your plate.
See, I don't
and
think
so
it's
that, a- and, but you're saying that that works in some way. So if you go out with your friends and they say, because people do spend forever on the menus too. That's another thing. I mean, it's like, come on. Especially if you go to a place like, what's a place with 9,000 items on the menu?
Cheesecake Factory.
Cheesecake Factory. You could be there for 3 days. So that would work. If you kind of took those small, non-consequential decisions off your plate. Okay.
Now let me speak. Well, don't leave that yet because I even go further, I think, than Michael. That person, from what I read in that New York Magazine story, it seems to me the step that they missed is he knows himself well enough. He doesn't only want to save time about inconsequential decisions. He knows himself well enough, I would bet, to say, I may agonize over this thing when I really shouldn't. So as a result, let me delegate that responsibility to somebody. Don't you think that's the thought process that led to that, Michael?
Absolutely. And the other great thing about delegating decisions, actually, is if you think about the regret you might have, if you choose yourself and you order the wrong thing, you're kicking yourself.
That's right.
But if they order the wrong thing, you can yell at them and you didn't do anything wrong. It's really a win-win for you. It's not so great to be the person picking for the other person.
You know, I'd just like to point out here as a quick aside that usually men have a much – I've always been envious of men because really the gray suit, black suit, blue suit, there's not that much khaki pants. I mean, there's not many of that decisions. Many more decisions for women. However, one of the things I've noticed about our senior senator, Elizabeth Warren wears the same thing every day.
She has like
black
four
shirt,
jackets.
Black pant, and she either wears a red jacket, a pink jacket, a blue jacket. Look how well she's done. So anyway, there's something to be said for wearing the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that upset me was one of the ways lots of us make decisions is making these decision trees or these lists. But you're saying that that's not necessarily fruitful either.
Again, it's if you're making a decision tree and an 8-page list on what to have for lunch. I mean, my God,
but
what are you
decision,
doing?
But a big decision. The pros in one column, the cons in the other column.
Absolutely. I think, think about committing yourself to using the right amount of time. So trivial decisions, you can say, you know what, I'm going to outsource these to somebody else. So I commit myself to not wasting time on this. Decision trees and making lists can be good because you're committing yourself to spend time thinking about it if you're using that time in an important decision. It doesn't necessarily mean the things you list are going to be the right things to list, but at mm-hmm. least you're saying, I'm going to take more than 4 seconds deciding how my retirement money will be allocated.
Okay, so Michael Norton, someone's listening to you and says, he's talking about me. I either spend too much time on things that are insignificant or too little time on things that really matter. I do want to find some equilibrium in the middle. How do you know when you found it? I mean, I understand that you should make that assessment, and then hopefully it becomes part of you. You integrate it into yourself so you don't have to be conscious about it all the time. But how do you know when you've hit the right thing rather than just finding another arbitrary point in the decision-making thing? Why are you smirking at me like that?
You don't.
You don't? You don't?
No, it is very, very hard to know if you've thought the right amount. That's the problem. So we think about it as in very broad strokes. You can know if you're thinking way too much, and you can know if you're thinking way too little. And a huge percent of our decisions, we're doing one or the other, in a sense. So it's really helpful to think about, is this a too much or too little thing I'm doing right now? But it doesn't necessarily say 17 minutes is the right amount to think about this and an hour and 32 minutes is the right amount to think about that.
You know, a lot of times I'm a terrible procrastinator. I've done this many times in my life. You know how if you're going to get the home improvement, you're going to have the guy do something, fix the gutters or whatever. You're supposed to get all these estimates and talk to them and all that kind of stuff. It takes forever to do that. So many times I just, pick the first one because I'm probably getting ripped off and he's probably not even the best person, but I don't want to spend an hour, checking the estimates. But let's move on to something else.
But no, wait, let's not move on. I think that's relevant. I think that should be part of your decision-making about decision-making.
Well,
saying,
it's time
even
or
if I,
money.
Exactly. Even if I'm deciding too quickly, considering the seriousness of the thing, Marjorie is making an internal calculation. It's going to cause me anxiety. Even if I make the wrong decision, what are the consequences? They're not so severe. So that is a relevant consideration for her in her thinking about thinking. Yes, Michael Norton?
Absolutely. And again, the anticipated regret you might have is a relevant consideration, right? So if you really feel that if you make the wrong decision, you'll regret it a lot for years, even if the decision's not important, you still want to take that into account because that says to you it's an important decision to you and you should spend time on it or not.
Okay, I guess you should pay a lot of attention to the person that's going to fix your bathroom or your roof because that really matters a lot. But let's move on to some of your examples, which I find absolutely fascinating.
This has got to be popcorn. Marjorie's been talking about popcorn all morning.
Well, popcorn, pizza, and coffee shop. There's several of them. But let's start with the popcorn thing since Jim mentioned it, about the habit of people who are into popcorn at the movie theaters. Tell us about that.
This is an amazing thing. So when you get
it is amazing.
Go ahead.
When you get popcorn at the movie theater, as many of us know, especially now popcorn is a little bit better at movie theaters, but let's think about in the 80s when there was popcorn and it was from 1922 or something like that. It turns out that people just mindlessly eat popcorn in the movie. By people, I should point at me. I mindlessly eat popcorn in the movie theater.
Love it.
And it turns out it doesn't matter so much whether it's good or bad, especially if you like the movie you're watching and especially if you're using the hand you usually eat with. So it turns out that we have – and everyone can think if you're eating popcorn, what's the hand – you hold it with one hand and you eat it with the other. You can visualize right now how you do it. I use my right hand to eat it.
I use my left.
I use my left, too. Yeah. I'm right-handed, but
so,
go ahead.
So when you're eating popcorn with your regular hand, that's when you're really mindlessly just shoveling it down. And what they found, the research, which is so fascinating, is if you use your other hand, then you can tell whether it's good or bad popcorn. You eat different amounts of popcorn if you're using your other hand because it prompts you to not be so mindless all the time.
So it disrupts the habit? Is that the notion?
Exactly.
That is, and by the way, when you say good and bad, he doesn't just mean, for example, the thing you and I have talked about through the years.
Real butter.
Real butter, like in what's the Brookline place called?
Oh, the Coolidge Corner Theater.
Coolidge Corner Theater.
Yeah, and Kendall Square, they have real butter,
too. You mean stale, like cardboard kind of popcorn, as opposed to freshly popped and that sort of – that is unbelievable. So habit is a huge part of non-decision-making, right? If you're doing the same thing over and over again. But that's also, when you think about it, getting back to your notion about consequence, okay, so what? So if I really don't notice the difference, and I mean this generically, I eat the stale popcorn, then something that doesn't have serious implications in my life is something that I didn't waste any time thinking about. So that would arguably be a good thing, no?
Yes and no, because if I told you afterward, are you aware that you just ate 300 pounds of stale popcorn?
Yeah.
You might not be happy with that decision that you made. There's a brilliant study, actually. Brian Wansink, who's at Cornell, has a study where he has people eat soup out of a bowl. And they eat the soup, and they finish the bowl, and they say, I'm full. That was good. But then he does this tricky thing to other people where the bowl is on a table, and there's a tube under the table. And it keeps filling the bowl up with soup, but you don't know it's happening. And people just eat for 4 days. I mean, they don't stop. And they say, I'm not full, because there's still soup in the bowl, so how could I be full? So the mindlessness with which we sometimes, especially with food and these other habits, is just extraordinary. And you're really trying to think of ways to kick yourself out of it. Eating with your other hand is just one random way, but what are the other ways you can kick yourself out of that to be a little more thoughtful about your behavior?
Now, there was another fascinating one, was the pizza. The guy that moved into the new town, and there were 27 pizza joints, and he ends up going to the pizza joint that's right next to his house. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we had this idea that everyone has their favorite pizza place in town every time. And it turns out that almost always, if you look at where people's favorite pizza place is, it's within 7 feet of their door. And we wondered why, because if you look at the math of it or the stats or whatever you're going to do, it's impossible. It's very unlikely that it would just happen that everyone's favorite pizza place is. So we wondered why that might happen. And it's because when you've moved into a new town, a new city, a new apartment, your first night, your first couple nights, maybe you wander down the street and go to a restaurant. Maybe there's a flyer on your door that says $10 pizza, whatever it might be. And you go there, and it's fine, because pizza in general is pretty much okay. But we don't say, huh, I bet I went there because it's near me, or I bet I went there because I got the flyer. We say, I go there because I like it. And then for the rest of our lives, we say, people are coming to New York. And we say, you have to go to this pizza place. It's the best place in the entire city. It just happens to be downstairs in my building. But I promise you, it's amazing. Again, we're not noticing the things that are driving our behavior. And so we're acting. In this case, it's not bad to eat this pizza versus that pizza. But we're making decisions based on things that aren't really very thoughtful. They're more mindless.
Which hand do you eat your pizza with, Michael?
Both.
Both.
So there's a theme here that we're kind of half asleep going through our lives, it seems like.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, my colleague Max Bazerman has a book called The Power of Noticing. And it really is just that word alone, noticing, I think is a very powerful word to think. So eating the popcorn, why am I going to this thing? Why am I taking 5 hours on this decision? Just a little bit of noticing more what you are doing can help prompt you out of that mindlessly doing whatever it is.
Only a couple more things for me, Michael Norton from Harvard Business School. How'd you decide to be interested? When I first came upon this topic before I started reading last night, as much of a fan of yours as I am, I said, this is ridiculous. I mean, the whole, this is, he wasted his time. And then, of course, I read it and I couldn't put it down. It was unbelievable. How do you decide that this is where I'm going to spend my time for the next month or week or whatever it is?
I'll tell you, the original idea for this, all of this research, came from an observation, which was, think about, we ran the study actually, but think about, you ask a man, do you love your wife? And he immediately says yes. Or you ask a man, do you love your wife? And he pauses for 5 seconds and then says yes. And then we ask people, how much do you think that man loves his wife?
He hates her.
Okay.
And same word, same everything, and yet we know that the time we take to do things makes enormous impact on our own and other people's judgments. That was really the initial intuition. We said, why is that happening? Let's study it.
Okay, so if you've engaged everybody listening to this like you engaged us from having read about your work last night, give people two or three tips that are achievable, not this esoteric, achievable things they could do today to improve the quality of their decision-making, both about everyday things and things that really matter. How do you do that?
I know from talking to other people that many people, when they are talking about this research, three or four decisions that they make all the time come to mind as ones where they're saying, oh my God, I agonize over that all the time. If it's a very, very important decision, then you should agonize over it. But a lot of them, if you think about it, they probably don't need to be agonized over. You may as well just close your eyes and grab a sandwich or grab a blouse or grab whatever it is and you'd be better off.
So make a list of the everyday decisions you make and calculate how much time and energy and brain power you put into that and try to reduce it if you can.
That's
yes?
Exactly right. And then there are, the second part is there are other decisions that you have made that are very consequential that you can think back and say, how long did I take to make that decision? And if it was a very short, so the one that always comes to mind is 401ks and retirement savings. Literally, people take 30 seconds when they start their job, check boxes, and never change it for the rest of their lives.
Oh my
and that's
God.
One of the biggest decisions we make in our entire lives. If you are someone who took 30 seconds to do that, maybe go back and rethink about, did I take enough time on that? And think of the other decisions you made in your life that have that same property. You took very little time, and yet it's having a huge impact on your future.
Okay, let me just end this by saying this. Based on what you say, because I'm going to try to start, and I'm going to forgive the two women at Whole Foods last night on River Street, who with five people behind them and one butcher at the butcher counter spent 5 minutes deciding which homemade yeah. sausage they should order. I'm serious. I'm going to start afresh. I'm over it. Let's move on.
And I have one thing to say.
What's that?
25 years ago, I was making those decisions about the IRAs and the 401ks.
How long did it take you?
About 30 seconds. And I'm screwed. Too late now? I'm just screwed.
Michael, great to see you as
always. Thank you
very
much for coming in, Michael. Michael Norton is a behavioral economist and a professor at Harvard Business School. He's the co-author of a terrific book, Happy Money, The Science of Smarter Spending. Michael, thanks for being here. Coming up, we're going to ask you about making decisions. Have you felt pressure to make split-second decisions only to regret making them in haste? Have you been the victim of overthinking a decision or giving something short shrift? That's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.